Welcome to the Front Row Back Row podcast presented by Physiogrowth. We're your hosts, Brian, who scaled a PT practice from the trunk of his car to six locations, and Owen, who helped lead an eight-figure exit and now runs a cash-based PT practice. This show is real conversations from owners actively building with what's working right now. All right, today we are talking about referral partners. So we are looking and saying, okay, we have a physical therapy business. Anybody who's owned one for longer than a month knows that the biggest problem is always getting new patients. And especially anybody who owns an insurance-based clinic knows that referral partners almost always means doctors. And then anything else on the side is great. Cash tends not to be as doctor heavy, but still can be. So today we're going to talk about referral partners. And if you look at business lingo, this is actually called affiliate marketing, meaning that one person controls a big amount of flow to your business, right? So instead of going out and talking to each individual patient, you talk to one person and then they push to you. So I say that as a definition because there's way more referral partners than just the local orthopedic surgeon. So Brian, I know you've built up six clinics there in Connecticut. You've done it in a lot of different ways. You have a lot of fitness offerings. You're big in the community. And I know it's just for listeners giving context, I'm a cash pay physical therapist right now, but I've had the insurance backbone. So Brian, I want your opinion. What are some of the key things that you look for when you're saying, I want to target that doctor or I want to target that community organization? Like what's your kind of first thought before you take that step?
So I think the one thing that's important here is recognizing like the 4% rule. And we've talked about the 4% rule, right? And making sure that really what I think is more important is having 20 to 25 really good referral sources than one unbelievable one. Because I think the reality of that is a great example is we're looking at one of our clinics and the numbers have just sort of matriculated slowly down. Nothing crazy, but it's not, we're looking at the trends. We're like, why is this not as busy as it used to be? And one of the first things that some of the guys talked about is, well, those doctors have, you know, opened up their own practices. They've opened up this, they've done that. And so the reality is like, especially MDs, you know, again, this is why I've also talked about direct access being essential for us is because they control our flow of patients, right? And so ultimately, if you see a slow but steady trend downward in any essence, that means your referral sources just aren't kicking the same business. And that's fine. As long as you're getting new referral sources. And so I think to answer your question of like, what do I look for in good referral sources? I don't think there's necessarily like, you know, I'm trying to think of a better way to answer it than like kind of giving an example. But the reality of good referral sources are just people who are going to give you referrals, right? Like that simple.
Well, and
right?
I think so, that's a great, yeah. I think that's a great rule because my question was assuming there's one golden goose out there that all our listeners are thinking, I need to find this one. And, you know, how did you do it? Because you've built a clinic. And I think it's really important to what you just said of really, honestly, you're not trying to get that big golden goose. You're just saying, I need to make sure that I need to spread it out to limit my exposure.
And I think for two reasons, right? So let's use the kind of thought process of like getting 100 new visits. Let's just do initial evaluations that we hope that in the month of May, right? Because let's call our April, since we're in April, let's think of, all right, this month I want to get 100 new patients, right? If I'm a clinic owner, right? And obviously that's different for everybody. If you have, you know, 20 employees, it's probably more or less or whatever, right? Like you can just name it. But let's use 100 to keep it round. If I need 100 new patients, it's probably a lot easier to find 25 different people who will send me 4 new patients that month or per month, so one per week, than finding one person that's going to send me 100, right? And so to answer the question is there's no referral source that's a bad referral source. Down to if you've got a family member who's involved in a nonprofit that's doing a thing that's around, you know what I mean? And a great example of that is like, I volunteer to coach my son's baseball team. I love it. Just, I would do it even if it didn't help me with my business. But being in the local business marketing, I had one of the coaches who's a strength and conditioning guy reach out to me today. And we started chatting about like, hey, how could we potentially collaborate sometime? Let's grab a cup of coffee. And like, you never know. Maybe we do collaborate. Maybe we don't. It doesn't matter. As long as the relationship's good, guess what? If someone needs physical therapy, he's gonna be like, hey, go see Brian and those guys over there. And then I'll just say, like, anytime you want to see physical therapy, like, I know we do strength and conditioning, but I'm not gonna like take your people. That would be bad for the physical therapy business. So I'll send them back, right? So the reality of that situation is you gotta, and there could be online stuff, right? We've talked about BNI, which is a network, which is an in-person thing, but there's online networking. I just started taking dance lessons with my wife, and she sent somebody over, the dance instructor. So like, it's little things like that where you never know where those referral sources are coming from. So I think it's a lot easier to get 100 different referrals from 100 different people than it is to expect, to your point about the golden goose, one person's gonna refer you 100 people. And I think
Well,
that's the difference.
and to be fair too, like we are in one of the few businesses where pretty much everybody needs us in some way, shape, or form at some point in their life, right? And I've even joked, I had a patient tell me, you should just wear a t-shirt that says, "Hi, I'm a physical therapist." That way, everywhere you go, someone's going to ask you about their shoulder. Someone's going to ask you about their knee, right? So, like you said, with your kids, you know, with their after school activities, or you in a different group, you know, all that stuff. We are fortunate in that way. It's not like we only sell to business owners. It's not like we only sell to dog owners, right? You have that. And I think the important part to look and the really tease out is it's not the same as what you might hear online of like, well, it's much easier to sell a $2,000 package to two people than it is to sell a $40 package to 100 people. Well, yeah, that totally makes sense if you can change high ticket, low ticket, and all that. And that might be a little bit more okay in the cash world, but I promise you the numbers are not that much different. Right. You are not charging $4,000 a session to somebody, right? So in every branch of PT, cash, insurance, whatever, right? You really have to mitigate risk. And it's more of like a stock portfolio thing of what happens if oil goes down. Well, you better hope that you had corn futures or whatever, right? So those, I think it's important because people will probably see online saying, well, I should just raise the prices. And if, you know, and so if I take that logic, then I should just really focus on the one concierge, high dollar, high ticket person. And I always say, you know, in my head, I'm always thinking about the one time we had a great orthopedic surgeon leave, loved me, build up a clinic. I think I hired four PTs off of his back, right? Well, guess what? His wife wanted to go to Florida. And he's a great surgeon, and a hospital was happy to have him, and he got to golf and he was fine. And I said, good luck, great, but that just completely screwed our business, right? And I mean, we bounced back, but you know, it was not, I mean, we very much took a hit because of that. So it's hard not to ride the wave,
And
but
that's the well, and that's the thing, right? I'm also not suggesting like don't ride the wave if it comes in that way. Because I had one surgeon, to your point, I have one of those stories too. Everybody who's been in business long enough has that story. Where we had basically I had an orthopedic surgeon who was constantly referring patients to me. But what happened was she got mad at me once I stopped seeing them. So once I stopped seeing all the patients, then it became, well, now Brian won't see my patients. Like, who is he? And it's like, listen, I'm growing. If we're gonna need other people to see other patients too, right? I need to have other physical therapists that are seeing patients. You can't just have me slammed all the time. And so she didn't like that and just stopped referring. And so ultimately, when that happens, like, it's something out of your control to a degree. So I think the aspect of that is, to Owen's point, the other aspect of why it's important to not just have one golden goose is exactly, which is risk, because your business is riskier if you have, too many people coming from one person. And by the way, that person then kind of controls you, right? So the aspect of it is like, oh, I want you to do this. Like I said, in this case, she was like, I want you to see all the patients. Well, if that was the only person I had, like I didn't tell the person to fuck off, but I was at the same time like, well, I really can't. I'll do what I can. I'll try the best. And eventually she like was like, well, nobody's seeing you now. And it's one thing if it was so and so, but now, you know what I mean? So that aspect is controlling, and it's troublesome. So no, I agree with you. I think there's an aspect of, and that's why I'm a huge believer of getting out in the community directly and going directly to people. It's why one of the reasons why I love running fitness stuff, because like we had a patient who got hurt, and like the first person she comes to, I'm like, come do physical therapy with us, and she's in our classes. So those are always huge, super important.
Well, and this is, and I want to now bridge to a point of, okay, I know I got to get to the community, I'll meet people, but I only got so much time. This is where affiliates really help, right? You got to convince one person, right? But the thing that I've noticed is that with affiliate marketing or with referral provider marketing, a lot of it actually is about making sure you stay on their radar.
For
And I
sure.
think the big thing, because we were, I was always in more of, and I mean, I don't want to say more of a corporate system because we started small, but she always had salespeople, and she understood that it is far more important to be in an office every 3 weeks, especially physicians, because they get everybody, right? So you have to keep your little notepad on top of everyone else's, right? You have to make sure that the front office knows you, bring in a little Starbucks or whatever, right? And it's old and tried, but honestly, it still works, right?
Yeah, man.
And I think that's, you don't want to do only that all the time. Because I agree, physicians are looking to ways to make their dollar too. They're trying to hire PTs to be in their back conference room. Like, there's all that volatility. But I think just the key point with affiliate marketing, even if it's a sports team, right? You got to show up. You can't just
For
be like, oh, he
sure.
loves me, I'm his guy, and then I'm good, on to the next. Like, you got to make sure you're either doing the most basic thing, which I love to do, is just send him a text after different appointments, right? Maybe not every appointment, but be like, oh, Joe Smith's doing great. Thanks, right? Or all the way up to, you got to drop by their office. You got to talk to them. You got to find ways of interacting.
I'm a big believer in just going in person because
Yep.
I'll tell you
It's
why.
the best possible. It's the best possible one. Yeah.
Well, and by the way, here's the thing about going in person. Like, it's so easy. If I sent Owen a text message right now, he could totally like ignore it. If I send him an email, he could totally ignore it. If I call, right? Like, you could ignore it. But if I show up at his front door, it's a lot harder to ignore me. He could,
Yep.
but then I could break down the door too. And I'm not
And
suggesting
you're
I
going to be
wouldn't
one of
do
the few PTs that's actually doing
that.
it.
I always think of this one. I learned this back when I was like a new grad physical therapist. I remember I was treating North Carolina, and I had a patient that I thought would really he had a I can't remember it was lateral epicondylitis, some sort of tendonitis, and I thought like that was when Ionto was big. Right. And so I was going to use
Yep.
iontophoresis. I can't even remember what the heck I was going to use, whether it was dexamethasone or something like that. I can't remember. But in North Carolina, you cannot just like order that stuff yourselves. That doesn't work that way. You have to go to a doctor. Doctor has to order it and then you can get it. Right. So I kept sending the script, kept calling, kept texting, or not even texting, kept emailing, sending the guy's phone number. That was before I realized cell phones were important. And the guy like wasn't responding, wasn't sending stuff back. And now I kind of look like a moron. When it came to being a physical therapist, when I was like, I just want this thing, and I can't even remember. God, this is like 15 plus years ago. I can't even remember if the doctor had said yes or no already. For whatever reason, I remember being like, it was supposed to be an easy thing. Like I was supposed to get this script, but he wasn't getting it to me. And it wasn't happening. And 2 or 3 weeks go by, and like the guy's like now 4 to 6 treatments in. Like, and so I finally just was like, you know what? I had some time in my day. And I literally just showed up and wrote a handwritten note, went to the reception, and was like, hey, can you put this on his desk? I literally just need this one thing and I can't get it. And sure enough, by the time I got back to the office, that script was like
Yeah.
in the fax machine. And I just remember it just showed me like the power of showing up because now it's like, I know you're gonna ignore me. And I think I might even wrote something like, hey, I've been trying to get a hold of you, but I really need this. It's making me look bad. And like it's like also making you kind of look bad. Can you get this
Yeah.
thing done just for me ASAP? And I came in person just to talk to you about it. And so there's those. And by the way, also for those of you who are ignoring, this also happens now. And I had this happen with an athletic trainer at a high school. One of my partners was trying to get in touch with his athletic trainer. The athletic trainer wasn't getting back to him. He texted one of his buddies who's a teacher. And he's like, I'm standing right next to him. Call him right now or text him right now. And he goes, I'll call him out. And sure enough, the text was there. And he goes, my buddy Mike's going to talk to you right now. And like all of a sudden, guess what? Now you got called out. Like, don't answer it. Let's see if you ignore it. Oh, sorry, I thought I answered this
Yeah.
text, right? Like, we don't know what you're doing. You're right. So
Yeah.
that's why in-person people are getting, because of social media, the advent of social media and like email marketing and AI and all this stuff, we're inundated with stuff. So I think ignoring certain things, is almost like a norm. And so I think from this perspective, if you think about going and showing up in person, I personally think it has so much more weight than it used to, even now,
Yeah. And you can even use, and you can use other things too, like POCs. We would always do hand delivered POCs to new referral sources. And it would just be like, okay, the director, I mean, we wouldn't make it like terrible, But if it was something where, okay, one of the four therapists that was on their way home, we would say, cool, when you leave for after your early shift, just drop this at their front door, right? Things like that, just manufacturing excuses. And I think, when you talk, so let's talk about referral sources in the community, ones that aren't like it's built into their practice. They need to refer to PT, either an orthopedic surgeon where it's 90%, or even a PCP where it's maybe 10%. Like, how do you go into a sports team? Maybe, I mean, yes, the ones that your kids are on, you're going to see a bunch. But like, let's say you're trying to get a club in the area, right? Or you're trying to get a gym or something. How do you go to them without being like a member? Because you can't be a member at eight gyms. You can't have your kids play eight different Little League games. Like, how do you get them on board and then keep them on board?
Well, one is I think that's the advantage of why I always wanted to do things at the highest level, like in professional sports. Generally, if you do stuff at the professional sport level, it opens up some doors just naturally. So for those of you who are like kicking the tires on, well, how do I do this or how to do that? That was my biggest thing. Like, I know to go out to US ski and snowboard, for instance, you gotta like go out to Lake Placid for 2 weeks. It's all airfare. It's like no, your money. It's like there's not, you don't get paid, but you got to do training. And now you're put into a pool for you to ski and snowboard. Well, if you go do a couple events, even if you make a couple bucks and you go do it or don't make a couple bucks, the reality is like if you're living in the Northeast like I do and you say, hey, I work with US Ski and Snowboard, and you put some of those posts out there or like talk with other people, I got news for you. You're going to get invited on podcasts. You're going to get invited to collaborate posts. And you walk into a place, go, oh, I work with US Ski and Snowboard. Like I did this training and I went to this event and things like that. Like all of a sudden people are like, oh shit, that's pretty legit. So for me to work in the Premier Lacrosse League for 3 years, then to do what I did with New York City Football Club still for the last 6 years, all of a sudden, like football club, lacrosse clubs want to chat with us, soccer clubs want to chat with us, and that's one way to do it.
So a
Professional sports
top-down approach.
definitely top-down approach, definitely helps with those things for sure. Along with it being fun, in that capacity. But, and then again, like that's something that's on your resume for life. You know what I mean? Like it's not like it's going away. So, like, I could talk about that, 10 years from now. So, the aspect of, when you think about trying to get involved with some of the pro sports stuff, that's where it's helpful. On the flip side, if I was just trying to get involved, and again, like I always joke about this for me, I joked casually here in the beginning of this episode that I took a couple dance lessons with my wife with a dance instructor. That doesn't mean I'm qualified to work with professional dancers, and I would say that because I don't really know dancing. You know what I mean? Could I help people? Totally. Could I help people as much as someone who's like a dance aficionado who also has a physical therapy degree? Probably not. So to me, I think some of the concepts here as well is also like know your niche. So like for instance, Owen loves golf, knows the game of golf. I've played golf with Owen. Owen's not exactly a scratch golfer. So at the end of the day, at the end of the day though, at the end of the day though, and Owen, you got a TPI certification too, correct? Yeah. So again, so he went and got his TPI certification. He likes golf. Borderline loves golf, right? And has a physical therapy degree. Like you can help golfers in that way. So how would I do it with Owen? I would say, hey, really look at all the golf clubs. Go to look at the different places like Golf Fitters. Go and work with other golf prof people who want to work with golfers, right? Put out golf content. Like that's all super helpful. And then I'll matriculate in other places. I know that Owen just doesn't just work with golfers. He works with plenty of other people, but it allows that to work. And then you can find people who are concierge into working into golf as well, and you can create golf programs. Whereas, like, if Owen then just randomly said, hey, man, I'm going to go work with this dance studio, there's probably someone who's niched into it faster than he has. So, like, I can think that's the difference is like, if you're trying to get in with a club, like, the first thing I would say to you, Owen, is like, try and find a golf club. Try and find, like, and I don't mean like even like a golf club, like a club that golfers go to. I mean, like, there's probably a group of people that are in a golf club to go do stuff around and play golf, right? If you're an avid runner and triathlete, going there's tons of those types of clubs, right? If you're a avid soccer player, obviously there's tons of those clubs. If you're a baseball player, there's tons of those clubs. So I think you kind of would start in your niche, and then what ends up happening is those clubs also talk and intermingle with other people. So now you have some reference points too. So I know that was kind of a long-winded way of saying it, but there's a couple different ways to do it.
No, and I mean, even, just to kind of break in on that too, I mean, I know you gave this advice in our mastermind group the other day of using charity. Right. And
Yeah.
saying, you
Yeah.
know, I will go to your golf event. I've done this probably 4 or 5 times
Yep.
where I'll go to a golf event because I know it's at a country club I want to break into, or I know it's with an organization that tends to have a lot of high net worth individuals who also golf. And then you look, you know, you want to help out a charity. Hopefully it's a reasonable charity. But then all of a sudden you become the guy who, oh yeah, weren't you like there stretching? So like, I mean, that's more of like a marketing podcast, but at the same level, like I have it, those affiliate, that sort of referral relationship where you become the guy for a club, the guy for whatever, has to come down to like just consistently being there and being top of mind.
I think you said that perfectly, Owen. A lot of it, I think, in my opinion, comes down to the idea of like you want to be around all the time. And the idea of like, and I'm becoming a bigger believer in this, especially in this like loud marketing world where people are talking about it. You just want to have your name in the hat on a regular basis. And the better you niche, the smaller the hat. So the reality is, if you're a gym in a small area or you're a physical therapy place in a small area, you want other people to know about you on a regular basis. Like, oh, I know that place. Then you want that doctor to basically know you too. And then you want that community that person lives in to know about you as well. And so what happens is when that person ultimately needs physical therapy, when they're like, oh, I would go to these couple places. Oh, these are great. Well, what about that like Evolution place? I know about the place. Oh, yeah, they're great too. That's awesome. Oh, cool. So my couple of friends went there, right? Or like something along those lines that happens. And so I think that's the real way that marketing will continue to always work. It's like a combination of branding along with outreach. And that's where social media can come in handy as well. We're talking kind of about referral partners in general, but the idea of what you want from the referral partners initially is just that they don't like squash you, right? That they're not like, go to my own place. What you want is for them, like, I know a great example, and I'm gonna do it. Hopefully it doesn't get our podcast isn't get canceled here. But HSS is a classic example. HSS clearly wants to refer within their house, right? But I have a
Insert
refer
any hospital in the United States. Thank you very
exactly. That's why,
much.
but
Banner down
I'm gonna particularly talk
here.
about like I don't think that HSS truly like pushes us in particular. But what I know that I'm pretty positive they don't do is like if somebody asks about us, they're like, oh yeah, that's a good practice. Like they're like they won't they're, so that's all you can ask for in certain situations like that. They don't control us and throw tons of people to us, but they certainly are not like gonna be in a position where they're gonna like try and hurt us or say,
They
no,
don't
they're
actively
terrible.
push people away.
Yeah, exactly. You want to make sure that you're like, all right, cool. Like I could at least, you know, I can at least be a part of this process and at least like I get my shot. That's all you can ask for. Right. So that's the idea behind it.
So then last part of this I want to talk about, because where I'm at and where you're at are two very different places, right? I'm a cash mobile PT trying to start getting my own location going, hopefully in the next year or two, right? I have the location, I just got to fill it, right? And you now have six clinics, insurance, you know, fitness side, all that. Scaling referral marketing, right? What would you right now, I think honestly my best scaling tool is to just be I'm a really good PT, right? You know, somebody gets a good result, they tell their friends, and then you know, what's worked for me is there's two or three concierge docs that are like, wow, no other PT gets this. Like, I'm going to send more people, so then I have referral partners. I don't want to say it's luck, but it's definitely like it's not a very, you know, meticulous, I can count on this every month thing that you need when you scale. So like, what are some things that you would say, you know, you had to kind of evolve towards like kind of managing referral partners and making it a little bit more, you know, kind of dependable over the course of, you know, a year. I know, or because over the course of growth. So like, I know you talked about making sure you diversify, right? But like, is there anything else that you like a schedule you keep, or you know, any sort of like thing in your head that you check off? Like, did I do that today that helps you get from like, ooh, I'm lucky to like, I have a system?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think it's a combination of two things. My brain went actually somewhere else other than like a system. So this is what I'll go with first. In my opinion, one thing that I think a lot of people psych themselves out over, right? And I'll post on LinkedIn about this afterwards because I think this is a good idea. I think one thing that I see on a regular basis is people are almost nervous they're going to get too busy and not be able to fulfill what needs to be fulfilled, right?
Yeah.
And so in having that mindset and doing that, what ends up happening is they kind of get freaked out and either don't do the thing enough and then don't get enough business, or go to do something and it doesn't work the same way because they're kind of reserved. And I'll explain. So like if I said to you, Owen, like I'm going to give you 50 new patients next week, right? You'd probably be like, oh shit, right?
Yeah, I
Or
can't handle
even if I,
that.
exactly, even if I said, hey, here's 20 new patients next week, you'd probably be like, oh, I can't handle that, right? And so the answer would be, well, can you handle, you know, 5 new patients week over week over week? And the answer is probably yes, right? You'd get busy, but you'd probably be like, all right, awesome. So I think there's more on the mindset of like, I want to shoot for getting 20 next week. Because if I can get 20 next week, realistically, that means I'm probably gonna get closer to 5.
Yeah.
So our marketing's not always gonna work out how we dreamed it would. And I think when it doesn't, or when it does, it like freaks people out. So to answer the question about scalable, the idea of how to be scalable is if you're getting too many patients, we're like, oh my God, how do I scale these patients? The answer is you're gonna hire somebody. And guess what? You just scaled, right? Like that's the idea.
Yes.
So I think being in the mindset is kind of huge. I think the other aspect of it is, doing things around that concept makes sense, right? Sending out weekly emails, sending out newsletters, going and connecting with other doctors, going and doing community events, going and doing these different things on a regular basis. Even if you're like, God, I don't have any time. I got news for you, you got to do it, right? Like, if any time that I look at our clinics have slowed down, it's typically because everybody got really busy. And so everybody stopped doing what they needed to do. And so the reality is, like, that's exactly when you want to continue to put the foot on the gas pedal because that's how you scale. So those people, the only difference between those people who scale and don't scale are the people who continue to put their foot on the gas pedal even when it's super busy, you know?
Yeah, and we talk a lot about how do not the last thing in your budget you want to sacrifice is your marketing budget.
Yes.
Well, you also got to think about that not just for money, but from time.
For sure.
Right. And that's where, again, it's hard because if you're not a business person, you don't really realize this, but like it's a much better problem to be too busy, right? And than it is to not have it, but the people see too busy, right? And then you get the one
Yeah.
patient who's like, oh, I can't get into your schedule and I can't, afford your new price or whatever. Nobody sees like not busy enough,
Yeah.
right? But you feel it a lot harder.
For sure.
So I mean, put it this way, if you were to tell me that same hypothetical, right, of like, oh, I'm going to give you like 20 new patients, the first thing I'm doing is I'm calling every PT in my phone book and I, or phone book, right, in my phone
I love that. I
and
like
be
the idea of
like,
you handing around, walking around
I
with your
know,
phone book.
yeah.
Let
I'm
me look at
old.
my phone book. Yes,
Yes.
exactly.
I'll check my abacus to do some math. But then, I would, but I'd be calling him and I'd be saying, okay, I charge 175 a session. I'll give you $100 if you want to see him, right? You got any space,
Yeah.
right? And then that way you stem the flood, right? And then you work on, okay, I need to hire. I need to do this. I need to do that. So there are ways around it, but yeah, it's much better to have more people. So, okay.
Yeah.
So then when it comes to referral partners, we really want to make sure we diversify as we grow. We want to make sure we're looking outside just the doctor box, and we really need to put in the time and the effort. I mean, there's a huge correlation between
Just
the
showing
effort
up.
and that. And that's, I mean, I see why people hire sales teams. I see why all that stuff happens. It might not be the exact PT, but it's consistency. So if you're thinking about these questions, if you're wondering what do big companies do, what do small companies do, I mean, I've had experience in companies where there's 900 clinics, right? You want to look at our website. You want to check out our mentorship group. It's physio-growth.com. We hold weekly Q&As with Brian and I. We go over all sorts of topics with the members, and we allow, even if you can't make that scheduled time, shoot a comment in our community group, and we'll be able to answer it. It's a really great resource for people, and we hope you all join.
Love it. Let's go.
All right, buddy. See
See you,
ya.
bud. See you, bud.